Hey there, it's Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I want to chat with you about a key ingredient for a fabulous date night, feeling sexy. And come on, let's be real. What you wear plays a big part in how you rock that confidence. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce you to Quince. Quince brings you premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at just $30, along with washable silk tops, 40-karat gold jewelry, and more. And guess what? All of their goodies are priced 50 to 80% lower than similar brands. By teaming up directly with top factories, Quince skipped the middleman and hands us the saving. Plus, they stick to factories with safe, ethical practices and top-notch fabrics and finishes. How awesome is that? Picking from Quince's website was tough, because they have a ton of fabulous choices. I ended up going for their 100% washable silk sleep dress in champagne. And let me tell you, my husband was floored. He's convinced whoever rocks this is in for a blast. I'm going to record some content on that dress so you can see how fabulous is that dress. Elevate your date night style with Quince. Pop over to quince.com/sexology for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexology to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sexology.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli.
Hello there. You are listening to episode 376 of Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli. I wanted to welcome you to this new season of our show. In next four episodes, we're diving deep into the sexual health and overall well-being of women in their midlife years, specifically those aged 35 to 50. Many of you have reached out with questions about self-image, sex, sexual health during perimenopausal and menopausal years. If you are in this group, or in relationship with someone who is, you won't want to miss this series. I wanted to start this series with a topic that often comes up in my practice, which is age gap dating. When we're talking about age gap dating, we're talking about the older woman dating a younger man. So in this episode, we're going to talk about why is there a stigma around age gap relationship and is it justified? We're going to talk about, from a psychological standpoint, is sex and intimacy different for age gap couples compared to those close in age? And we're going to talk about some of the signs of healthy age gap relationships. Our guest today is Dr. Sarah E. Hill, an evolutionary psychologist and professor renowned for her expertise in societal relationships, dating, and women's health. Dr. Hill has made groundbreaking discoveries on the role of hormones, the immune system, and our environment in relationships. She has educated the masses through TEDx Talks and authored book on how birth control affects women's brain. Currently leading the Health and Relationship Lab at TCU's Department of Psychology, Dr. Hill continues to explore questions about relationships, human mating, and health. So before going to the episode today, I wanted to talk about my YouTube channel. I don't know how many of you know that I have an active YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out for more insight and discussion on topics like this. I'll include a link in the show notes so you can easily find and subscribe to stay up to date with all of our latest content. All right, without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Sarah E. Hill. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome back Dr. Sarah Hill to our show. Dr. Sarah, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me back.
I am very excited. I know last time you were in our show, we talked about your wonderful book on effective birth controls. And I recommended the book to so many of my clients since then. And for our listeners that they haven't checked out that episode, make sure you're going and listening to it, because it can answer many of female-bodied individuals' questions that are on birth control that no one is talking about it. But today we're here to talk about something different, which is age gapping. I was very curious when I learned that you were doing this research. I certainly see this pattern in my practice with my friends. So tell us a little bit about how did you get interested in exploring this?
I have, as a researcher who studies women and studies women's psychology and women's sexuality, I've always really been interested in double standards that we have for women that we don't have for men. So just to give you an example, you know, we all are familiar with the double standard about sexual behavior where, you know, if women have sort of casual sex, we see them as being terrible and we have all kinds of terrible words for them. But of course, we don't have those same words for men. You know, for men who do that, we reward that kind of behavior. And it's seen as no big deal. And you know, and it turns out that when it comes to sexual double standards, that's not the only one that exists. They exist in all sorts of different domains. And one of the domains about which we have double standards when it comes to sexual behavior and relationships is with age gap dating. And, you know, when we look at women who date younger men, oftentimes the words that we use to describe them are predatory, right? It's the idea of like a cougar. But we don't have a comparable word like that for older men who date younger women, right? We just call them men. That's the only word we have for them. And so I was really interested in trying to understand the dynamics of age gap relationships between older women and younger men, and then also understanding some of the stigmas that exist and why we use this predatory language. And that way we can try to get at the heart of, you know, sort of what is it that people have a problem with when it comes to these kinds of relationships? And why does it differ for women compared to what it is for men?
You brought up such a great point, the stigma around it, which we're going to talk more about it. And also, I think that's kind of part of this internalized stigma that I hear from many of my clients. They judge themselves when they're in these consensual relationships, which from my male clients, I don't hear that. It's like, oh, you know, I'm so attractive. Younger women are into me. I know that many of my male clients also have the self-awareness. But again, it doesn't sound like there's anything wrong with these relationships. We're going to talk about the challenges as well. But in your research, when you looked at the age gap, what was the kind of average age difference?
Well, generally, when we're looking at age gap dating, like as defined as age gap dating, we're generally looking at the difference in age about 10 years or more.
And so what are some of the stigmas that many women who are age gapping experiencing?
I mean, I think that oftentimes what we see when you see older women who are dating younger men, I mean, it's seen as being predatory, right? Where they're just, you know, taking advantage of these poor, helpless young men, and that they're trying to, you know, exploit them for sex. And so there's a lot of stereotypes that tend to sort of surround these kinds of relationships where we tend to think that the women are predatory because they're older. And the idea is that there's a power imbalance because if you're older, then you have more power. But, you know, when we actually look at the research, these relationships are really unlike, I mean, they're just like almost any other relationship. And the thing that tends to bring the people together is a mutual attraction and a genuine organic connection. And that, you know, when you look at who calls the shots in the relationship, you find that it's usually the power is shared between the younger and the older party. And so there tends, you know, we tend to think that the older women are exploiting the younger men for sex. And we think that the younger men are exploiting the older women for money, but that just really doesn't seem to be what's going on at all. It's people who really are mutually, you know, just have an organic connection between one another. And when we ask about what are the primary benefits that you see of dating someone who's younger or dating someone who's older, what we see is that the older women really value the sort of free-spiritedness, the open-mindedness of the younger men. right? As well as, of course, their, you know, sexual stamina and attractiveness. But primarily the thing that comes up as number one is that they just really like their sort of living in the moment, you know, sort of the thing that comes with youth and not being so serious. And we find that the thing that the men value the most about dating older women is their emotional maturity, right? And so they like being able to be in a relationship where they can have a good conversation. There's not a lot of game playing that goes on. That tends to happen with both sexes when you're younger and you're still learning your way around relationships. And so, you know, when we look at these relationships, despite the stereotypes of, you know, predatory behavior or, you know, exploitation, or that they're just based on a desire for sex or money, when we look at like the content of these actual relationships, that's not what it is at all.
So I'm thinking about kind of like the studies that I've seen on age gap. I'm kind of curious about your kind of study. So you said if we're thinking about 10 years, right? Are we saying like average, like I would think like women in 30s, women in 40s, that is the age difference like starting?
I think that's usually starting, like we usually see it starting with women in their 40s, but women in their 50s. I mean, I think when we look at what the prime demographic is in terms of the people who are seeking out these relationships, it's generally women who are in their 50s, early 50s usually. And the reason I think that we tend to find this, you know, sort of pattern where you get, you know, a later 40s, early 50s, is a lot of these women have already had children. Their children are raised. And now they are able to sort of put aside some of these roles that women so often find themselves in of, you know, a spouse and a mother. And they're able to just enjoy, you know, sexual freedom and enjoy relationships unencumbered by things like childcare and sort of have a relationship that's based more on like what they desire instead of just like what they need. And I think a lot of times, especially, you know, when we're having children and getting married and, you know, doing those involved in those types of relationships, I think that there's a tendency to a lot of those relationships tend to be focused on what we need. Right. You know, it's like, I need somebody to help me raise my children. I need somebody who's going to help provide. And for these women, and most of them tend to be very successful and, you know, and have achieved a lot in their life. And it's now is their opportunity to be able to seek something that just makes them happy and that gratifies them in other ways.
And I always, when it comes even age gapping for heterosexual couples with men being older, I always think about, okay, if it's that consensual, it's not use of power. It's whatever works for people. But it's interesting, as you said, that people start looking for alternative motive when they're seeing a older woman dating a younger person and whatever it is. Like I have a friend that she's really funny that she started dating someone like 15 years younger and her mother told her, be careful. He's only wants you for sex.
And I'm sure she was like, oh, no.
That's what she said. She said, oh, do you promise she only wants to do for sex and nothing else? And the same family, they have another son that they're doing the same. And this just not even occur to them. Like that wasn't a conversation.
Right,
but I think in the heart of it, it's truth, right? Like, okay, maybe that the partnership is only around sex. But I think as women going through different ages, they give themselves more permission to kind of like only explore things in erotic spaces. There are so many of these relationships that have multiple levels. But what if it's only for sex? If it's something that's both partners are excited about and they're compatible.
Right. It's like we've been letting, like men have been able to do this for years and we've never had anything to say about it. And even when we look at age gap relationships that are male led, so where the male is the man is the older person in one of those types of age gap heterosexual relationships, generally the person who's getting stigmatized is still the woman, where it's like, oh, she's a gold digger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like we have all of these double standards in what's okay for men to do and what's okay for women to do. And so in the case of age gap dating, as you said, it's like, I think that we really frown upon societally the idea of women starting a relationship because it makes her happy and for sexual pleasure. And that is problematic in our sort of, you know, worldview of like what is okay and not okay for women.
And I think kind of even going through reflecting on my life, right, that I definitely right now, I'm in my 40s and I'm more sexually free. Like I prioritize sex, but I remember when I was younger, there were just so many shoots in place that like in order for this to be good, it needs to have be excellent outside the bedroom. It needs to go lead to certain kind of relationship. But right now, as I kind of met different milestones, I have the capacity to say, okay, this relationship can be whatever we agree on, right? There is no necessarily specific structure that I need to put it in.
Right. And I think that that's like one of the really wonderful benefits of women being able to be economically dependent on themselves. And I think that when we free ourselves from economic dependence on men, it does open up this whole other area of, you know, new types of relationships where we're not having to worry about choosing somebody to take care of us or to help make sure that we're not, you know, old and alone. We can like build our networks of girlfriends and have people around and take care of ourselves financially. And that can be very freeing for women. And it allows them to explore different types of romantic and sexual relationships.
Since you've done research in this area, what are some of the pros and cons of these relationships?
So I think that's, you know, as I noted, what we found when we were asking people about what the primary benefits are of these relationships, and what we find is that for older women who are going out with younger men, they really tend to like the open-mindedness and the free-spiritedness of the younger partners. They also like their sexual stamina and energy that way. And so that's like a big plus for dating younger. And then for the younger parties dating older, the emotional maturity and, you know, and also financial independence, those are things that are really valued and appreciated by younger partners who are dating older women. And in terms of the drawbacks, you know, the primary drawback, I think, well, there's a few. So one of the drawbacks is the fear of just having nothing in common. Right. And that is if you're going to be going, you know, in a relationship with somebody who's got a 10-year difference from yourself, there's the possibility that if you're somebody who's really into whatever it is that's of the moment, like you're really into pop culture, that your partner might not be into the same things that you are. But of course, that is an opportunity to learn new things and to get involved in new things. And so some people see that as a challenge and other people see that as a real benefit. Another challenge is just being in a relationship where stigmas still exist means that you are going to have to ask yourself, you're going to be asking yourself, I wonder what the neighbors think, right? Or I wonder what this person thinks. Or, you know, people might even tell you what they think without you soliciting their opinion. And, you know, I think that if you're going to be getting into one of these relationships, I think that it's always useful to ask yourself about how you plan to navigate that, because this is something that will unfortunately still be encountered because there is still this taboo. And again, I think that a lot of this taboo is wrapped up in our limited ideas about what's okay for women in sexual relationships. And that, and you know, it's an opportunity to overturn people's views about what these relationships are really about, which again, the, you know, the research finds that it's really just about an organic connection between people who are really, you know, mutually attracted to one another, just like any other relationship. But because these stereotypes exist about predatory types of behaviors, you know, it's useful to know that you're going to be having to deal with that and then also be able to overcome it.
So, you know, what's interesting, I was thinking about where are these stories, stigmas coming from? Growing up, I think the only kind of model I had for an older woman being in a younger relationship was coming from the movie Graduate, like Mrs. Johnson. Right. That was the only thing. And I was thinking, I was feeling horrible. I remember I was like 10. Probably I should have not watched that movie when I was 10 watching the movie. I was like, oh my God, poor guy. But then recently I looked at it and my perspective shifted drastically. Of course, again, with the dynamic of, I think 90% of people have watched the movie, but the dynamic was unhealthy because the person was not in a consensual, non-monogamous relationship. So she was cheating on the partner. So there was lots of issues there. But that is the imagery we had, right? That like the older woman needs to seduce a vulnerable younger man. And it's just, it comes with the cost of betrayal to their family, all of that chaos. But I've noticed recently it's been the kind of the portrayal has been more positive. When did we start noticing the change? Is it because what we see in pop culture or our society kind of like we updated our script about women and dating, and that's why we're seeing a different shift.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit of both. So I do think that in pop culture, we're starting to see more, you know, of these kinds of relationships. Like, for example, when Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian were together, and then you've got like Priyanka Chopra and Nick Jonas. And, you know, so we're seeing more of these relationships. And when people see that they're normal, healthy relationships like any other, I think that that helps to decrease the stigma. I also, you know, when I talk to other relationship experts, one thing that everybody seems to note is that everybody got a whole lot more open-minded about relationships after COVID. And I think that being in lockdown and having to sort of reevaluate life the way that a lot of us did when people came back out into the world, I think that people were a lot more tolerant. And I mean, in some ways we've become less tolerant, but I think that in terms of relationships, it seems like people have gotten more tolerant. And I'm not entirely sure what's responsible for that, but it's something that I've heard noted from several researchers who study all kinds of different types of relationships about which stigmas exist. And so when they look at, for example, same-sex relationships, age gap, same-sex relationships, consensual non-monogamy, all of these things have just in recent years. And again, like I said, when I talk to my colleagues who study this, everybody notes that it seems to be after the pandemic, that things just, people got a little bit more open-minded about the fact that relationships aren't all going to look the same. And so I do think that we're seeing an increased tolerance, despite the fact that these stigmas do still exist. And the people, you know, people who are promoting the stigmatization and who, you know, sort of perpetuate the stereotypes by the types of comments they make if they have a friend who's dating somebody who's older or younger, you know, oftentimes that behavior is motivated in a not great place. You know, it's motivated from trying to control other people's behavior. And, you know, so if you are, for example, a young woman who doesn't have a partner, you're, of course, not going to like it when a beautiful 50-year-old comes in and starts dating the people in your dating pool, right? So it's going to increase competition. And it's also going to, especially if the older woman who's in the dating pool is not looking for long-term commitment, that could be potentially problematic to a young woman who's looking for commitment in that same dating pool, right? Because that, of course, creates more competition. And it sort of lowers the price of sex, as it were, simply by making sex available without commitment if you go out with this other person, whereas you're requiring it. And so if you have a man who doesn't really want to commit, then, you know, option B is going to be better than option A, which would be the younger woman in this case. And so I think that there's a lot of sort of motivated behavior that's behind the stigmas, and that oftentimes it's aimed at trying to control the behavior of generally the women who are dating the younger men.
That is so true. And kind of going back to the point of COVID, I remember that, like, facing that existential crisis, like, okay, so we all might die today. I know it changed many of my kind of views and habits for a better. And I know for some people, not necessarily for the better, but I think that was such an interesting kind of chapter in all of our lives. When we're thinking about age gap dating, you were thinking about same sex, we're talking about upper, like, heterosexual relationship, but I saw that you made a reference with same sex couples. What I assumed for same sex women, the stigma, I would imagine it's less, or it's about the same?
No, it's less. You're right. So when I've talked to people in the lesbian community, for example, there is much less of a stigma, and people don't look at it and you know, as being unusual or strange. And I think that when you are in a stigmatized group already, as unfortunately the case is when we're talking about people who are in same-sex relationships, stigma still exists with people who have those relationships as well. It's like it's like they're already stigmatized. So it's like there's a double stigma doesn't tend to happen. And we see this with gay men too, because gay men also, age gap relationships are fairly common and they're not stigmatized. And so that is really interesting. I think that there's a level of open-mindedness that gets created when you're in an already stigmatized group, where it's like you don't like to throw swords, you know, when you're already being, you know, sort of targeted from the outside.
That is such an interesting kind of insight. I didn't think about it that way. I thought, okay, like probably there's a less of feeling of competition for fertility, for the evolution piece, right? Because I can see a lot of stigma comes from that, oh, we have to pass on our genes and you had your own shot. So now it's my
turn. That's really interesting. That's really interesting. You know, and I bet you're right. I bet that there's an element of that. And then I also bet that there's an element of, you know, it's like, the heterosexual relationship script we've all been fed since the time we were little is, you know, boy meets girl, girl meets boy. They're roughly this age. They get married. They have 2.5 children and a dog and buy a house in the suburbs and the whole thing. And so I think that for heterosexuals, it's like our relationships are a lot more scripted because there is a lot more of a cultural script that we've all been fed, and that for people who are in non-heterosexual relationships, there's not as much of a script they're expected to follow. And so because of that, I think that it makes the norms in those relationships a little bit more fluid than what they are in heterosexual relationships, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's multifaceted. And I'm glad that you're doing this work so people can think about it and explore it. And also kind of when thinking about healthy relationships, I think that like in all types of relationship, we see healthy and abusive relationship, and it's a spectrum. What are some of the kind of like healthy patterns that you see overall on this group of the population when you looked into their relationships?
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, when we look at age gap relationships, with the research that I did with Cougar Life and with Ipsos, when we were like asking people about, you know, what are the benefits and what are the drawbacks and why do we get into these relationships? What we found is that, you know, they really are like any other relationship in very many ways. And so because of this, a lot of the red flags and green flags that we can look for in these relationships are very similar to what we see in regular relationships, just, you know, like regular non-age gap relationships, age matched relationships. Mm-hmm. And that is that, you know, generally what you're going to want is healthy communication, right, is probably the most important thing in any relationship. And it's especially important in age gap relationships, just because there are these stigmas that exist. And it's really important that you're very clear about your expectations. Because anytime that you're in any sort of a situation about which there are stereotypes or these pre-existing notions about what it means, I think it's incredibly important that partners are really explicit about what their own motivations are. Right. Because, you know, if there's a stereotype, for example, that older women are exploiting younger men for sex, and you're a younger man, and this woman is really interested in you, and you're really interested in her, I think it's worth the conversation. Like, what are your intentions with this relationship? Just to make sure that everybody is on the same page. And so I think that healthy communication is the most important thing, and also a healthy sharing of power. So as noted, you know, from the research that we've done, there hasn't been, it seems like there was a survey that was recently done of users of Cougar Life, which is this app that's for women who are looking for age gap relationships and for younger men looking for these relationships with older women. And when looking at the power dynamics, like who makes the decisions in these relationships, what we see is that they're equal, there's equal power sharing, and that the both parties report that they're sharing power. And I think that that's something that's obviously very important in the context of an age gap relationship where there could be a power asymmetry, because generally the older partner has more experience and money, right? And sometimes that can be used as a tool for power and being the one who makes the decisions. You know, it's the golden rule, right? He who has the gold makes the rule. And so, but what we find is that these relationships don't tend to be characterized by that, but that's something to look out for, because that's by far the biggest risk with that these types of relationships is having an unhealthy power balance, not communicating about expectations, and then having some sort of false expectations, and then, you know, not having your needs met because you had a false idea about what the relationship was being built on.
So important, and goes back to another point of like the financial independence that we talked about, how important it is for women to be able to kind of recreate whatever, like make all the decisions that they feel it's comfortable for them. Since we're toward the end of our conversation, for our female listeners that they are intrigued, they say like, okay, I want to kind of explore this kind of like options out there or kind of included on the dating kind of like life that I have, what are some of the recommendations you have for them?
I mean, I think that there's no better time for women to be exploring age gap relationships than there is right now with the advent of dating apps like Cougar Life, which allows you, I mean, I think that that's a wonderful place for women to be able to go and just dip their toe in the water, because of course you can go on and create an account and see what's out there. And so I would recommend that. And then also just, you know, before you do that even, is really getting comfortable with what it is you're looking for. So if you're kind of curious about these kinds of relationships, why are you curious about these kinds of relationships and what are your motivations? So that way you can sort of have expectations for yourself about what it is that you're looking for and then being able to articulate that to a partner.
Love that. So if our listeners want to learn more about you, about this topic, what are some of the places they can go to?
They can find me online at sarahehill.com, and that's Sarah with an H. And I'm on all social media outlets as Sarah E. Hill, PhD.
Well, thank you so much for all the great work that you're doing. You always find the best topics to research. I can't wait to see what comes up. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, no, I agree. I think it's been so fun. It's been so fun to understand women's hormones and the role that that plays in sex and attraction and understanding the different types of stigmas that surround women's sexual behavior is really interesting. And I think it's so important because for so long, you know, we've all just had to follow these rules that exist for women. And I think really questioning them and trying to help overturn these things, I think is really empowering to women.
Thank you so much for doing research on that. I think that's also very important because definitely, like, it's my bias, but like men in power, that's not the research they would want to do, right? They want to keep right. The same structure existing.
Right. No, I mean, that's absolutely the truth. And when you look at psychology, you know, in the first 100 years that psychology was even a science, it was mostly about men and men's issues and the way that men see the world. And so it's been really fun to be part of a growing body of female scientists who are kind of turning the tables on what we know about the human psychology experience.
Well, thank you so much again. It was so lovely to have you on your show, and hopefully we'll have you in our future episode.
Okay, great. Thank you.
As we wrap up today's discussion on age gap relationships, I encourage you to take a moment to examine your own gender biases. When I heard about my friend dating a much younger guy, I had noticed that I had a reaction, which was very interesting for me. So I needed to pause and reflect where was that coming from. So I invite you also to reflect on how societal norms and expectations may have shaped your views on dating and relationships. Consider the diverse examples of age gap relationships we see in society, from celebrities to everyday couples, and think about underlying dynamics and mutual respect that make these partnerships successful. Remember, it's important to approach relationship with an open mind and a willingness to understand and appreciate the unique experiences and perspective each person brings to the table. If you are in an age gap relationship and you want to share your story with us, please feel free to DM me on my Instagram at Sexology Podcast. And before we go, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel for more discussions on topics like this. You'll find a wealth of information and insight to help you navigate the complexity of relationships and sexual health. The link is in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me today. I look forward to continuing this journey with you as we explore the fascinating world of human sexuality. Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.